Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Get Yourself the Job with Jennifer Hill, only on LA Talk Radio.
Well, happy Monday, everyone, and thank you so much for tuning in to Get Yourself the Job with Jennifer Hill. Before we get started with today's show, I'd like to take a moment to thank our sponsors who make today's show possible, the folks over at Markham Search. Markham Search LLC offers premier professional recruiting services throughout the United States, with offices on both coasts, and provides contingency, executive recruiting, as well as temporary staffing services. So please do keep them in mind for all of your staffing needs. Today we have with us on the show, Dr. Natalia Peart. She is the author of the brand new book, Future Proofed: How to Navigate Disruptive Change, Find Calm in Chaos, and Success in Work and Life. Dr. Natalia Peart, PhD, has more than 25 years of experience as a clinical psychologist and an executive leadership consultant. She served as an adjunct professor at the University of Nebraska, where she taught women in leadership courses, as well as Creighton University's College of Business Administration, where she taught management of nonprofit organizations to MBA students. Natalia was also the senior director of the Corporate Executive Board, a provider of best practice research to leading global companies, and she served as staff psychologist at Johns Hopkins. Dr. Peart completed her postdoctoral fellowship at Georgetown University and her clinical internship at Harvard Medical School. Natalia received her PhD from the University of Maryland and her BA from Brown University. She's also served on the boards of Operation Hope, the Federal Reserve Bank of Kansas City, the University of Nebraska Medical Center, and many others. Dr. Natalia Peart is also the former CEO of the Women's Center for Advancement and former consultant for the Gallup Organization, where she worked with companies in the financial services, medical devices, high tech, hospitality, retail, and automotive industries on strategic and tactical management issues. Thanks so much for joining us today, Dr. Natalia.
Oh, it's a real pleasure to be here. Thank you for that wonderful introduction.
Wow, it's impressive. I mean, my gosh, I can only imagine you probably spent 10 years in just going to school for all of those amazing accolades.
It was a bit of a journey, yes.
But look where it landed you. Now you're one of the foremost experts in the world on the subject, and you're a doctor to boot.
Thank you.
Yeah, so tell us a little bit about your story. How did this all come about, and how did you decide to go and get your PhD and become an expert in this field?
So, you know, it's one of those things where I can tell the story looking backward, but certainly didn't know what story I was writing as I was in the midst of it. You know, so when I went to school, I thought, okay, for sure, I want to be a psychologist. And so that was the reason why I ended up getting my PhD in clinical psychology, in clinical / community psychology. But somewhere along the line, and I loved the work, I loved helping people, and to this day, that's sort of the thread that runs through it. I realized at some point, though, it wasn't that I only needed to help individuals. I also loved solving all kinds of problems, whether it was for people, whether it was for businesses, whether it's at national levels. And that's why my career really takes a couple of twists and turns, because ultimately I figured out that it wasn't just about one title, psychologist. It really was, hey, you know what? I love solving business problems. I love teaching how to solve business problems. And I love working as a consultant or even with foundations. And it's a great lesson for all of us. We don't always have to have sort of a narrow way to see our life. We can open it up.
I love that. And so you wrote this book. Tell me a little bit about this book that just came out, Future Proofed, and How to Navigate Disruptive Change. Obviously, throughout the world, there's so much change going on. You can barely even get through it in the news. When I skim the news every morning, there's just,
that's right,
you know, every country around the world is going through dramatic change. And then locally, we have, of course, a lot of changes happening as well. So how did you come up with the concept of this book?
Sure. You know, it's one of those things where I feel like I wasn't really looking for the concept. I felt like the concept found me. And part of it has to do with the fact that at some points, as we just talked about, I worked with people, I worked in companies, and I also worked, leading nonprofits. By the way, leading a nonprofit just as the Great Recession hit. And wow. At the time, just at the tail end of it, that's when I was also on the Federal Reserve Board. So I had this really interesting seat to watch what was happening, right? So on the one hand, I was seeing people that really thought that life was going quite well. They had good, stable jobs and just were doing what they were supposed to do. And then all of a sudden, the rug just kind of got pulled right out from under them. And at the same time, I'm sitting on this board and I'm listening to, the unemployment numbers and what does this mean for us long term and will we recover as a nation, and just watching all of this, how it impacted our nation, watching how it impacted people. I have to say, Jennifer, at the time it was clear to me we were not going to ever recover and just move on in the way we used to be. We were going to have to think about our lives differently. That's the reason why I wrote the book Future Proofed. We need a new blueprint for our lives. The way we used to think about it before, one job for life, one career, loyalty to one employer. We have to think about it so much differently now. And that's how Future Proofed kind of grabbed me by the throat.
I completely get that. I was just mentioning that at a talk I was doing at a school this weekend. And I was telling the students that many, many years ago, what used to be considered stability on a resume, my clients would laugh at me on the recruiting side of things if I ever sent them a resume with less than a solid 5 to 10 years of stability. And now in today's market, post the Great Recession, 2 to 3 years is considered great stability because that's people right. just don't have the same loyalty because what they learned from seeing their parents get laid off after 10, 20, 30 years of service, or maybe it is the parents who were laid off. Everybody is a lot more hesitant and apprehensive and reactive because of the circumstances that everyone found themselves in from 2008 to 2015.
That's exactly right. It's a whole new world. It's a different way that we now must be proactive on our life. But the other reason I have to say that I wrote the book, because while that's one big story, there is this other sort of sub-story that I think is just as important. We no longer want to just feel like a successful life means we gave everything we had to our employer. Just as we saw that didn't work in terms of employee loyalty, that sense that you're not living life, you're just observing it. And it's all about work, 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 but there is no fulfillment, no enjoyment. Where is the meaning? Where is the purpose? That's not the way in which people really define success. And right now we're in this midst of what, I think many of us talk about the epidemic of stress, the epidemic of burnout. And so we really want a life that's more integrated, right? One where you understand a new blueprint. But the blueprint is not just about becoming a human doing, but it's also about what does it mean to be a human being and have a life well lived, not just I'm the most productive in the office.
And it's such a catch-22 because I work with a lot of law firms and I'm currently in the midst of writing white paper for them on the changing role of law firm leadership. And we've seen it impact all different industries and law firms are beginning to grapple with it on their ends because for many years you had lawyers who would set their prices and now clients are saying, no, now we're actually going to set the prices. We're going to flip it on you and tell you what you have to do and give you the time constraint. And with technology and all these ever-evolving changes, law firms are beginning to operate more like corporations, which we're seeing. But it's not just happening in law firms. It's happening where you're seeing across the board of a lot of different corporations and industries, people are expected to streamline and be more effective and produce more work, yet you have that juxtaposed with the people who really want a better work-life balance, and yet you're trying to get one person to do five people's job. So how do you reconcile that in the studies that you've done?
And I think that you have summed up absolutely perfectly, right? It's this catch 22. And I think the way to reconcile this is to first of all recognize this isn't just a problem that only a few people are facing. This is, to your point, it's across industries. This has become an epidemic, whether it's the stress epidemic. And I think the biggest problem we have right now, this is the first step to really seeing this differently. We've got to stop internalizing that if only I do a little bit more, then I can solve the problem. No, it's not going to happen that way. Right. So we always think, OK, well, if I just give up every single weekend, if I just keep my phone on 24/7, if I just find a way to not even sometimes multitask, but triple task, I can get it all done. That's the fallacy, right? The first fallacy is I can multitask my way through this. I can work harder. And by the way, I'm not suggesting that it doesn't mean that we shouldn't be working hard. But what I am saying is we've got to step back and switch the paradigm and say, well, if it's not multitasking, how do I work smarter? So let's talk about the reason why the current paradigm we're in doesn't work. So most of us say, okay, well, let me just find a way to do two things at the same time or three things. Let me just, you know, type up my emails and I'm talking on the phone, or, you know, when I'm home, I'm going to be doing three things at the same time and I could get this all done. That's our usual solution. But the problem here is that your brain cannot actually focus on two things that require the same part of the brain at the same time. So you think
what?
You're
don't
actually...
tell me that. Don't tell me that, Dr. Patel. You've ruined my whole work plan and strategy for the rest of my career.
Right. But you know what? We all think it, right? Don't we wear this multitasking badge, like, you know, of honor,
with
of
pride.
Right? Look how productive I am. Look how much I get done. I'm on top of it. You know, and we don't feel good about ourselves when we look at our list and we don't have enough things checked off, right? We're like, it just is not working out for me. Let me see if I could do these three things right now. But the problem is you're fooling yourself, and here's why. You think you're typing out an email and you're talking at the same time. You know what you're doing? You're typing a piece of an email, and then your brain is shutting off of that, and then you start talking. And then you stop listening intently to type again. So all you're doing is switching back and forth because your brain cannot process two things in this that use the same part of the brain at the same time. But then it gets worse. And here's how this gets worse. It's the switching back and forth. Now there is a mental tax on your brain. And when you start to overload and mentally tax your brain, not only does it take your brain maybe about 15 minutes or so to fully now get you back to what you were, the level of concentration you had on the first task, but over time, you are depleting your mental resources. And now lots of studies talk about the fact that you are really starting to do some long-term brain just depleting your energy, your vitality, your ability now to focus and use your brain efficiently, because now you're burning yourself out. So what you thought was a solution is really the problem, because now you're in the burnout cycle where you just think, oh, okay, well, I'm not getting stuff done. Let me work even harder. You're burning yourself out even more. So we've got to abandon this idea of doing that. Here is what you should be doing instead. Your brain can focus for like 90 to 120 minutes at a time. So if you then say, okay, you know what, I'm going to do this one thing, then I'm going to get up and I'm going to take a break. See, because our bodies already naturally tell us when it is time to take a break, right? We start to lose concentration. We start to fidget. But what do we do instead?
Oh, we work harder.
Let me work harder. let me get some, you know, let me get some sugar, let me get some caffeine because I got to power through, as opposed to listening to the fact that your body has a natural rhythm. Get up, take a quick break, move your body. Now work with your body. Get your muscles moving and get the exercise in, because now you're going to start to restore and recharge. So it's a series of sprints, not one long marathon. That's how you should work with your body as opposed to against it.
Yeah, it was brilliant. I remember when your publicist sent me the little like teaser in the headline, and I was just so caught off guard by it that I immediately responded. I think your publicist had sent me something saying how to get worse at multitasking and why doing so will make you happier. That is just genius, because so many of us, we're just running around like chickens with our heads cut off, or an old adage. And we're trying to accomplish this and that, and we feel like the world will come to an end. I don't know about anybody else out there listening, but I literally feel sometimes like the world will come crashing down on me like Stuart Little if I don't get all 500 of these things done in a day. And yet those days where I have that mentality, I actually feel drained, bitter, frustrated, exhausted, resentful. And the days where I maybe come up with 10 things that I want to accomplish in a day instead of 50, and I do those 10 things really well, I feel accomplishment and I feel happy and joyful. And like I, you know, just today I had literally given myself 10 intentions that I wanted to accomplish today. And right before we got in the show, I was like, wow, you know what? I accomplished every single one of those 10 things I intended to do. And I could have added 30 more things and beat myself up about not doing the extra 30 things, but doing those 10 was exactly what I needed to accomplish today.
I think that is such a wonderful example of, you know what? Let's now be a bit more realistic. Let's do these 10 things well. But there is also something about what you said there around, and you know, and you felt happier. What we often end up doing, why we end up feeling so drained and exhausted, is not only didn't we accomplish everything we set out to, because we really just kind of overloaded the expectation, but we also put off even a sense that I can be happy even while I have a to-do list, right? So it's the I'll be happy when. Nope, I can't experience any moment of smile or joy because look at this list. Didn't get through this list. And you start to feel, to your point, you start to feel bad about yourself. You feel off, like.
Beat yourself up. I mean, my internal dialogue is like, you suck. Why didn't you accomplish this? You've done so much more.
What's wrong? I got to keep moving. Okay, I got to get my head in the game. What's wrong? And we go through this whole thing where and we do this over and over and over. And so not only is the world moving so fast, not only are we now trying to piece together our life, right? The home, the work, the multiple demands we're always on. But look at what we're doing to ourselves. This is coming from all directions. We have got to put the brakes on having this unrealistic level of expectation that we're going to leap tall buildings in a single bound every single day. No question, there are going to be some days we're going to have tough deadlines and we're going to have to power through. But then maybe the next day we give ourselves a little bit of extra time just to celebrate. And then to your point, every day doesn't have to be a fire drill. Maybe it's 10 good things, not 15 the hard way. That's the way in which we now are going to have to manage our lives.
Yeah, and it's funny, something occurred to me right before I stepped in to do the show with you is I had one of my colleagues who's a manager or director in our company, and there was something that I normally would have told the person how to handle a situation. It was a strategic thing. That person came to me with a question, and how often do we as leaders in an organization spoon feed people the answers, where actually when you're working on developing a team, what's really been a breakthrough for me is, as much as I have all these things to accomplish in a day, to pause and to ask the person, well, what do you think we could do? And what if we approached it this way? And to let them think through it, because studies have shown that if you allow somebody to actually come up with a solution on their own, even if the first or second solution isn't viable, then what that can do is it gives them the capacity to feel happy and to feel generative rather than just being told what to do and taking direction. And that's not healthy for one's growth and development to begin with.
That's exactly right. You know, when I think about, you know, our role as leaders. I think that, you know, oftentimes this word manage has such a connotation of, you know, let me just tell you what you need to do. Okay, let's go ahead and look, let's be fair. Sometimes, you know, you're just trying to move fast and blah, 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 blah. But our role as leaders is we've got to build capacity. And we all want to feel as though we are growing and we're contributing. Because it's an interesting thing when you tap into that within people, the discretionary effort that they will bring to the task is so much greater than if you kind of lock down and say, okay, now listen, here is where we need to be. And let me explain to you the road we're going to travel to get there.
Exactly.
No need for us to think about other paths or ways. Let me just explain how we're going to get there. Okay, well, who wants to live like that? But if we can open people up, it is amazing to see where their creativity, where their imagination, where their input can now continue to lift the original task too. Absolutely amazing.
Yeah, I love that. And it's so great because I feel like, and this is another topic which deals perfectly with what we're talking about in your book too, is what is and how do you find happiness? And I think perhaps for me, one of the concepts I'm personally playing with and looking for research to validate it is what if we've taken away individuals' ability to earn happiness as young adults in the workplace, as adults, because we're constantly just trying to give people what we think will make them happy rather than giving them this opportunity to trip and fail. And I had a colleague last week, actually, who said, oh, I couldn't imagine failing. Like, I just wouldn't survive it. And I know, at least for me, I grew up, you know, in the 80s of, you know, it was okay to fail. Like, yes, you might make a mistake and you might trip and fall and you might totally blow it. But it's okay to fail and then learn from that. And out of that learning experience, you're going to be 10 times better. And that is something that for me personally, I found has contributed to my overall happiness and well-being.
You know, I have to say, Jennifer, you're tapping into such an important topic for a couple of reasons. There's some nuances that you are bringing out here that I think let's maybe kind of hit them. Because it's so important on many levels. So you were talking about earn happiness as opposed to just, okay, here it is, here it is, here it is. You never fail. You never learn. It's just, I'm happy because I'm always doing things that are successful. See, here's the problem with that. As you get older, that sounds like maybe a kid, you know, wants that, right? And we know everybody gets a trophy mentality. But it's a real trap. It's a real trap, and here's why. When you meet the world, right? Because school is one thing, but when you meet the real world, and it is not possible to be successful every single day, you are boxed in this very small corner. I can only do things that I know I can, quote unquote, get the A on, because my sense of self and my happiness is wrapped up in this definition of how I succeed. It's a real trap. We're living in a world and we're living in times where, let's go back to what you said, first sentence, 2-3 years, you're in one job. You're going to have to keep reinventing yourself. But if you're unwilling to reinvent yourself because you're unwilling to fail, you just moved yourself into a trap, because your sense of self and your happiness is based upon, I don't know how to fail. Our happiness, to your point, our sense of who we are cannot be tied and tethered to, did I succeed at this task? Your sense of self has to be much more stable than that. I am happy today simply because I am. And you have to fill in the blank with something much more stable, something that you know is true about you regardless of what's happening today. That's what's critical, and especially in fast-changing times, we need to know that we can be happy and who we are regardless.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. In fact, I remember a consultant at a Big Four company once said, when change happens, people feel left out. And so you have millions, if not billions, of people around the world who are constantly feeling isolated and alone and afraid, quite honestly, because you're looking externally to your boss for approval or for your colleagues, or that you wrote the right paper, that you did the right thing. But these are all doing tasks, to your earlier point, as opposed to the ontological side of who are we being and what have you chose? I remember I heard an African shaman, Ishmael Tete, I think was his name, speak years ago. And he said the most profound thing. He said, what if when we woke up in the morning, we chose to put on gratitude colored glasses, happy colored glasses, instead of rose colored glasses? What if you actually cognitively thought and brought awareness to the perspective that you were going to bring to your day, instead of just tripping and falling out of bed and thinking, I have to feed the kids, I have to walk the dog, I have to be to work in an hour, how am I going to accomplish all of this? What if you just paused and chose the perspective you were going to want to see your day through? Then you could choose to be happy that whole day, irrespective of whatever you encounter.
I love it. You know, and there's actually a piece in my book where I talk about, start the day with, today I choose. Mm. It really doesn't matter all the things that are going on in our life, but to the point you've just made, every day must be a choice. Every day we must see the decision and the choice that we can make. We don't have to just roll along with the things on the list and our obligations. I talk about it in my book as the trains are running. We know the trains are running in our life. We know that. But switch your focus. And if you do that by simply saying, today I choose, what is it that you choose? See the day, see your world, see your week through the lens of what you choose, not just through the trains that are running.
Yeah, and it's about not being a victim of circumstance, because we can go around. There was an article, actually, somebody was sharing today on Facebook that got into the neuroscience of how people who complain regularly actually rewire their brain to be depressed and anxious. And you probably know much more about this, being a doctor and clinical psychologist, than I do, reading a quick article on Facebook that someone shared. But I thought it was so interesting, because in my office, even, we made up like a fun game. And that's the thing. When you look at all of this as a game, not like it's a have to, you know, Dr. Natalia and I aren't saying that you have to or that you should do this. We're saying, like, what if you could? What if you could choose to try this on just like a jacket? And if you like it, wear the jacket. If not, throw it back in your closet and find something better to wear. But like the game we were talking about with my team is, when somebody in my office complains, we talk about calling jalapeno on one another. So like, you just kind of turn it into this game. If you hear somebody complain, you can call jalapeno on them. And we even talked about putting like a dollar in a jar and just kind of bring awareness, because we don't even realize how much we complain and how frustrated we are and how this perpetuates, you know, a difficult culture in an office if you're constantly surrounded by people who are complaining, or if you're doing the complaining yourself.
That's exactly right. And I think there's, to your point, there's a few important things to say here, right? Like, we're not suggesting that no one should ever say anything at all about anything. That's not the extreme
that
either one of us are saying. However, let's now really understand the importance and to your point, the neuroscience behind the importance of what you're saying, because we don't see the things as they are. We see them as we are.
True.
And the problem is, when we are stuck, in this pattern of, I only see what is wrong, I only see the reasons why I can't, I only see what's not working well, the problem is that all you're doing is reinforcing those paths in your brain, and you are not opening yourself up to create new paths. You are simply retreading and retreading and retreading. And it's interesting, because if you're around people that are stuck, isn't it interesting that they can tell you a story two years from now? well, 2 years after the fact, and say it with the same emotion and intonation as though it just happened yesterday. Because when you start to retread and retread, and there's almost like this reward center, right? Like you could see that's just what they know. Their familiarity is, this is my identity. I wear this identity like a coat. Let me explain what's going on in the world that did not go my way. And it's a vision on life. And for folks like that, you just have to say, okay, got it. But let me invite you to also see the opportunities. I talk in my book about both and. Those things might be true. We're not here to talk you out of what might be happening. But every situation, there is a both and. Those things might be true. There might be a problem. But now can we move to see a possible opportunity, another possible option? It doesn't take away the original commentary. But can we see the and in there? Can we see the nuance as opposed to, this is my only option to be a victim?
Yeah, absolutely. So I think it's, like you said, it all comes down to perspective. And like you talk about in your book and like we're talking about right now, I think it's just about shifting the way that we think and shifting who we're being about situations. And instead of just doing, trying to multitask and accomplish as many tasks as we can in a day, I think it's just about, how do I do one thing, do that well, give it my heart and soul, not be drained by it by the end of the day, and go home fulfilled and find happiness in that one thing.
That's right. That's right. Give yourself, you're going to have to not wait for the world to give you short moments where you can celebrate yourself. You're going to have to do that for yourself on a regular basis. Celebrate yourself. Celebrate those small successes. And happiness is right now. You don't have to wait until everything on the list is completely done. Happiness is right now. Live right now.
I love that. Oh my gosh. Well, Dr. Natalia, I could talk to you for hours, and I obviously want everybody to run out and go get your book, Future Proofed, How to Navigate Disruptive Change, Find Common Chaos and Success in Work and Life. But tell me, there's so much wisdom that you have to offer to our listeners. Was there anything that I didn't ask you about, or that a salient point that you would love our listeners to walk away from today's show with?
You know, it's so interesting. I think that we ended up covering so many of the important points, but I think, you know, one of the things that we really, really, really want to keep in mind is that, yes, the world around us is moving fast, but we always have to know, what's our center of gravity? Where is our happiness? Who are we? What's our big vision? Keep yourself, understand your own center of gravity so that you don't feel like it in the constant movement in life that all you're doing is drifting. You're just needing to make a series of shifts, shift intention, shift what you're doing, but that always has to come back to a center of gravity. What's important for you? What's happiness for you? What is engagement and fulfillment for you? Know that first.
Beautiful advice. Well, please tell our listeners, where can they find your book? If they want to find more information on what you're up to, where would they find all of that great information?
Oh, Jennifer, thank you for asking. If you are looking for more information, all the traditional places that you would buy a book, of course, Amazon and Barnes & Noble. Again, Future Proofed, How to Navigate Disruptive Change, Find Common Chaos, and Succeed in Work and Life. All the places that you'd normally buy a book.
Perfect. Wonderful. Well, thank you so much, Dr. Natalia. So again, we've had Dr. Natalia appear with us on the show today talking about her new book, Future Proofed. Go out, find it. It obviously is wonderful for anybody out there just trying to navigate this world that we're in and all the changes that are going on in it. So it's been such a pleasure to have you on today, Dr. Natalia. And thank you, of course, to all of our listeners, to everybody who is tuning in from wherever in the world you are, or people who listen at a later time to the podcast version. You know, thank you. This show would not be possible without your listenership. And we do invite you, if you missed any portion of today's show, or if you really liked this segment of it and want to go back and listen, this full show and all prior shows will be available on iTunes under Get Yourself the Job on iTunes. You can also find us on Get Yourself the Job on Facebook. We have a Get Yourself the Job page where I often share other articles that don't make it to the show, but come from really interesting press releases and other things that I think our listeners might be interested in. And finally, you can also find the show on the LATalkRadio.com website on the Get Yourself the Job page. At the bottom of the page, you can find the archives of this and all prior shows, and feel free to listen at your leisure, share them, and certainly leave us any feedback or ratings on Facebook or iTunes. We greatly appreciate your feedback. So thank you again, Dr. Natalia. It's been such a pleasure to have you on today.
It's truly been my pleasure. Thanks again, Jennifer.
All right. Wishing everybody a great week.
You're listening to Get Yourself the Job with Jennifer Hill, only on LA Talk Radio.